Ron Ayin Tes Amud Beis, just past the middle of the Amud, two lines above the Mishnah. We learned in the Mishnah that we were talking about the various when we say that the payrus of karka that the wife inherited during the marriage, when we say that those payrus belong to her, when we say the payrus those payrus belong to the husband. And the end of the Mishnah had said that Reb Shimon had differentiated as follows. If you have the when they're mechuber, when the payrus are mechuber lekarka, when she first gets the asset, when she first gets the karka, then he owns those payrus. He's considered to own those payrus, as opposed to if they're still attached to the ground when he divorces her, then no, they belong to her. And if they're detached from the ground, then the other way around, they don't belong to him at the beginning, but they belong to him at the end. When he divorces her. The thing is, that was Reb Shimon. The Chachamim had said something somewhat similar. The Chachamim said any fruit that's attached to the ground is his, anything that's detached from the ground is hers. Now the question is, the Gemara asks, when Reb Shimon Amim Makam Shiyafakar, Chir Reb Shimon Hainu Tanakama, isn't Reb Shimon effectively saying the same thing as a Tanakama? Yes, but the difference between them is the produce that's still attached to the ground when he divorces her. The Rabbanim weren't really talking about that. So Reb Shimon says, Reb Shimon is saying that it grew in his possession, therefore it's still considered his. Reb Shimon is saying like this. Reb Shimon is saying because they're still attached to the ground when he's divorcing her. Yeah, you're right. Then sorry, the Chachamim said that it belongs to him because they grew in his property. They grew under his when he still had control or a certain degree of ownership over the asset. Whereas Reb Shimon says that no, that the fact is that right now they're still attached to the ground and therefore they're not considered payrus yet. Payrus would be once they're detached.
Why?
Payrus and payrus. No, because the definition of payrus, according to Reb Shimon, is when they were already detached, then he gained control over them. But if they're still attached to the ground, then they're still considered part of the karka. So that's the difference. And the Rishonim discuss, the Rishonim argue who the halacha is like. The Rif actually passed in the coins of Reb Shimon. Evidently, because he holds Reb Shimon is not necessarily disagreeing with the Tanakhama, he's just clarifying it. That's a different machlok. How mechuber does it have to be? Does it have to be that it's almost ready to be? Does it have to be that it's ready to be picked already? Is it still part of the character or not? That's a different issue. Yeah. Mishnah says, Nafula Abodim Ushfachas Kenim. What happens if she inherits slaves or maidservants who are old? And the point of them being old, Tosfos points out, they still can do some work. Hello? They still can do some work, just not very much. They may not even be worth the amount it takes for their upkeep. So Zimachru, so let him be sold, be loch man karka v'oich peiros. You buy with it karka and he'll be peiros, because otherwise, like this, he's not getting any peiros out of it. Reb Shimon Gamliel, I'm a loy timker. Reb Shimon Gamliel says that she does not have to sell it, meaning Rashi says she can object and say, I don't want them to be sold. Yes, it's true they're old and we're not really getting any payers out of them, but I still want to keep them. I still want to hold on to them. Mipnei shein shvach beis aviyah, because as we said yesterday, it's an advantage for a father's house that they have these avodim that are passed down as part of the estate. Yeah. So she has. She has the opportunity to say that I don't want them to be sold. Mefarshim to discuss over here, according to what Rashi says on the Gemara.
But
in other words, the point is, right now there still are payers, they still are doing some work. So therefore, she can argue. Therefore, the fact that they're not accomplishing very much is not a reason to take away my shvach beis aviyah. There are mefarshim who explain that Rashi also implies the other way around. What if she wants to sell them and he says, let's hold on to them and I'll get whatever payers I can out of that. Maybe also the idea would be that we listen to him then and we don't sell them. Similar case, Nafalah Zaysim Ukfanim Skenim. What if she inherited old olive trees or old grapevines, which, again, they're still producing fruit, but they may not much longer? Same thing, Yimachru Vilachach Ben Taka Voychaperis. Again, sell them and buy with Ben Taka, and he'll eat the peiris. And the idea is, it's not just a matter of that we're safeguarding his ability to eat peiris, we want to safeguard her ability to ultimately have a keren. Like we discussed yesterday, we want to have that ultimately there comes a point when the thing is not producing peiris anymore, there should be some kind of keren. So yesterday, for example, we talked about there's animals, there's at least the skin left. So over here also, when we have these old grapevines or whatever, the point is, we still want to have that she'll have some kind of keren, which the Gemara will talk about then, what kind of keren she'll be left with.
Why we don't say this second case,
Shvach Italia, also? Well, that's it, that we do. Rabbi Yehuda makes the same argument as Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in the first part of the Mishnah, that it's Shvach Vesavir, it's an advantage to her for her family that they're inheriting these things, and therefore she should be able to say that we should hold on to them, yeah. The Gemara says, "Amar Kahan Amar Rav, Machloikas Shenaflu B'Sada Shalal." This Machloikas in the Mishnah is in the case of the olive trees and the grapevines is if they're in a field that belongs to her. So her father actually owned owned a field that contained trees or grapevines or what have you, and she inherited the land with the trees. So then the point is, we can look at it, she's going to end up with a keren, ultimately, even after the trees die off, she still has the land. So therefore we have the argument whether we should say that she can prevent him from selling off the trees, or whether we can say, whether he has the right to sell the trees in order to get payers, or whether or not. Ava b'sada she'ena shalah, but if the field...
The
so the karka itself is the keren.
And the tree also?
No, the trees were...
The tree itself,
I mean, eventually you have firewood, I guess, so maybe that's part of the keren also, but it's not very much, it's not really much of a keren.
It will deteriorate.
No, but I mean, anything eventually deteriorates, but no, the pasture is the wood. Okay, the wood itself maybe is considered part of the keren also, but it's not really much of a keren.
Right.
If the field b'chlal doesn't belong to her, so her father originally just bought the trees without the land, so a third party owns the land. He bought the trees. And the deal is that he's entitled to get the fruit from the trees until the trees dry up, and at that point then there's nothing left. Divrei Hakol Timker, then everybody agrees that it should be sold mishum dekakalia karna, because then the karen is going to be lost completely. So this is what we're saying, is that then we can say either one has the option to say we should sell it. The husband can say let's sell it because they're old and there's not going to be payers, and she can say let's sell them, because if we don't, then there's not going to be any karen left for me, because once these trees dry up, then there's nothing left. There's no asset left. The actual karka belongs to someone else, and the trees themselves are just going to belong to him also, the dead trees. So the Gemara says, Master for Rabbi Yosef objects to that. Hare avod mishpachas dekisada shena shalad dami. What about the case of slaves and maidservants? That's the equivalent of a field that doesn't belong to her, because what happens, like we said yesterday, when they die, there's nothing left of them. You can't use their skin or anything. And yet we see in the Mishnah that there's machlokes about avodim as well. So you see, it's not a question of whether the field is hers or not. So the Pnei Yeshua asked the question, I mean, so what? So you have in the first part of the Mishnah, you have Rabbi Shimon Gamliel saying, Shvach Beisavir, and the second part of the Mishnah, you have Rabbi Yehuda saying, so fine, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel has his opinion, Rabbi Yehuda has his, what's the contradiction? How does the Gemara even point out anything like that? And so the Pnei Yeshua answers, because if we're saying that, given that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is talking about the case of Avodim Shvachos, where there's no Karen left, where Kalya Karna, Evidently, Rabbi Yehuda would agree with that concept. Yes, in the case of Zaysim Ukfanim, you might have a case where there's still a keren, and you might have a case where there's not. But he would presumably agree.
He would
still agree with the basic idea that it doesn't matter whether the keren is gone or not. Yeah. Having said that, though, there are Rishonim who have the gifts of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in both halves of the Mishnah. So no, rather, what Rav Kahana said was rather as follows. On the contrary, the argument in the Mishnah is where the field doesn't belong to her. So therefore, there's not going to be a keren left. And therefore, we have the same machlokas applies to avadim and shvachas as well, which is the equivalent of a field that's not hers. But if the field actually belongs to her, then everybody agrees that it shouldn't be sold. She has the ability to block the sale because of the shvach of her father's house. Because she can argue, okay, you're not getting very much payers out of it. It's a problem, but the fact of the matter is, it's shvach of Etzavia that I should have this land. Eventually, fine, the trees will die off, we'll plant new ones, and you'll get payers out of that.
And for the one that does not belong to her.
For the one that's where we have the machlokas. That's where we have the machlokas. So who's the halacha like in those? I don't know. Mishnah says, "Hamotzi hotzoris al nichsi ishtoi." If a husband spends expenses on his wife's property, because what we're saying, when we have this concept of nichsi milug, that the property belongs to the wife and the husband gets the payers. It's not just he's not getting the payers for free. I mean, there is the fact, there's the quid pro quo that we talk about, that in return he has to bail her out of captivity if it comes to that. But besides that also, there's expenses. Yeah, when we say that he gets the payers, he's responsible for putting in expenses into the field or whatever it is, to plow it, to fertilize it or whatever. Pay the taxes, yeah.
If he wants Paris, obviously.
What happened? He spent a lot on expenses, and he ended up only getting a little bit of Paris out of it. Or Kima v'achol habe, or the other way around. He got he spent a little, and he ended up getting a lot. Yeah. So the din is masha hotzi or masha achol. Fine. Whatever he spent. Whatever he ate. In other words, we don't weigh one against the other. We just say there were a lot of expenses and very little profit. Okay. Tough luck. There were very little expenses, and you got a lot of profit. Good. You got lucky. Yeah.
The fact is that making money off of, and she said this money should be for the family, or he could do what he wants.
That we're actually going to talk about later on. At the end of Pei Amud Aleph, and then top of Amud Beis, we're going to talk about the concept of Ravach Beis.
No, wait a minute. We said the Paris is in case you have to redeem her.
We said it's not just that you put the payers in a bank account.
So what do you do with the payers?
Obviously the payers have to be either eaten or sold, right? Oh. So we're going to talk about that later. What exactly? Right. We're going to get to that in the course of the Gemara.
The concept is because if she has to redeem, redeemer.
Right, but what we said is we said we don't want him to put the payers away in a bank account or something, because what's going to happen when she needs to be redeemed, he's going to go start figuring out, well, there's $10,000 in the account, it costs $20,000 to get her out of jail, I can't be bothered. Mashenkin, if he's spending or selling payers as they go along, then he's going to figure, you know what, I got a lot out of it. He's not going to sit down and then figure out down to the dollar and figure that he hasn't gotten enough to make it worthwhile. Yeah.
I
mean, does he have to profit from the Paris before he's next year going to change and say, you know, I can redeem her now because I enjoyed her.
That was the idea. We said we want him to be able to have the Paris because psychologically, then when it comes time to redeem her, he's not going to start then figuring out, since he hasn't been putting it away in a bank account all this time, he's actually been spending it as time goes along. So psychologically, he's going to be thinking that he got a lot more than maybe he really did. There's no Paris, there's no Paris. What can you do?
So you were saying there's a certain point where he feels satisfied enough and he's going to redeem her, and Before that, he won't.
But we want to make sure that he'll feel the need to, rather than saying, you know what, I can't be bothered.
Yes, you are.
Anyway, so here what we're saying is, it doesn't matter how much the expenses were versus the profits. What's done is done. On the other hand, hotzi v'loyach. What if he spent expenses and didn't actually end up getting any payers at all? Then yeshava kama hotzi v'yitzol. Then what we do is we make him swear and based in how much he actually spent, and he's entitled to collect that.
Collected from her
Yoshim or whatever, yeah.
Because he was given a free field and then...
No, not really. What it is actually what we're... And we're going to talk about in the Gemara. We're applying the case over here effectively. It's considered... This is sort of like... Imagine that Reuven has a field and Shimon goes and starts working that field. There's actually a different dinim in that regard. There's a case where he goes with Reuben's permission and starts working the field. In that case, then you treat him like an artist. He's entitled to whatever percentage that sharecroppers get in that part of the world. Or you can have the case where he goes shaloi b'rishus without the other person's permission. Where then it depends whether this is a field that usually would be planted or not. If it's a field that usually would be planted, then again you consider him much like an artist, because even if Shimon hadn't gone in and started working it, Reuben would have had to hire somebody else to take care of it. If it's a field that's not usually made to be planted, then we say all Shimon is entitled to is his expenses. And he has to swear to that. Here, we're treating that similar to that case. We're saying, in other words, she doesn't really gain from the fact that the field is being cultivated, because the payers anyway are going to him. So therefore, we consider it the equivalent of him being an artist without permission in a field where she doesn't really stand to gain anything from it anyway. Fine, but he's entitled to his expenses.
Well, if you say the payers belongs to him, it gives her also the payers to it or not?
No, but they actually...
Together.
Well, no. We said that he has a responsibility to support her in return for Maisi Odea.
Right.
But supporting her, these are
part of the payers.
Not necessarily. I mean, the payers they belong to him as a practical matter. Yeah, he's going to be taking then and then writing out checks for her support or whatever. But in principle, they could be thought of as different bank accounts. He has one bank account in which he's storing away the payers. And then, aside from that, he's working or whatever, and he takes some of his expense, he takes some of his earnings, and uses that to support her. And not necessarily is he supporting her out of the payers, per se.
His own job. This is just
something
next to
him.
Yeah.
How do they get money out of
it? What do you mean? He doesn't know.
How do they get money out of his wife?
She has the actual nechassim. The nechassim alog belong to her.
So he could force her to sell?
Or whatever it is. Somehow. She has other assets. Yeah.
It's a good field making
good
payers, and he sells it, making a lot of money.
Yeah.
But he's not making nothing.
No. Veloy Ochal means he didn't have a chance to have any payers yet. Doesn't mean that it didn't produce any payers.
Oh.
It means he didn't have a chance to eat any yet.
So he has to wait.
It means investment.
Okay, but right now, let's say they're getting divorced, and he hasn't had a chance to yet. So, there could be that. There is, by the way, also a machlokes, as we're showing him on the question, what happens, for example, so are we talking about that, you know, so you could have, for example, that there's three different fields, and he cultivated two of them and hasn't had a chance to eat payers from two of them yet, but there's one more that he ate payers from that. Do we combine it all together and say, after all, he had payers, or do we look at each one individually? You can also look at it on an annual basis, and you know, do you say, for example, if in 2014 he spent expenses on it and ate payers, and now in 2015 he spent more expenses and hasn't had a chance to have the payers yet because they haven't rented them yet? Do we count each year individually, or do we say in general? Yeah. Okay. So we ask, v'kama kima, when we say if he ate even a little bit, then we say masha hotzi hotzi or masha achal achal. What's actually considered a little bit? Even if he only ate one dried fig, but this is provided that he ate it in a becovered dicker way. Meaning, in other words, like a person usually sits and eats. My first explain, it means like a person would usually sit and eat in his house. Not like he ate it in a way of gezel, not like he just ate it like running down the street kind of thing. He actually ate it like a person eats from his own nechassim. Amar Rav Abba, Amri Beirav, they say in the yeshiva, afilu shigra d'tzmari, even if all he had a chance to eat was shigra d'tzmari. So what is that? Rashi says a couple of possibilities. One is they used to take dates in those days and press them together and make into a mush, which then they would make into hard cakes. Shigur the tamri is that is if he didn't eat fresh dates, but all he ate was these that have been pressed together into a thing like that. Then Rashi says that his Rebbeim explained that shigur the tamri means a cluster of grapes like they grow on the tree, which are not fully ripe yet. And Rashi says I have a problem with that on certain grounds of the Gemara elsewhere that implies that fresh dates are better than dried ones. If he said even a gregaris, which is a dried fig, is good, how much more so fresh ones should be good? Tosfos says that, okay, we could be talking about when you eat a whole cluster of them together, especially if they're not really ripe yet, that's not as good as even a dried fig. I go to Bach, gives a different I go to Bach, gives a different answer. Dried figs are better in a certain way because they are better in a certain way. It's just fresh ones, sell more easily, etc. There's a lot of different possibilities over here.
Does that imply that anything more than that she has to?
No. In other words, that even if all he ate was the sugar to the tamari, then already it's considered he had benefit from the field. Therefore, at this point, he's not entitled to his expenses back. He spent a lot of expenses, but he got something out of it. What happens if all he had a chance to eat was chub to the tamari? Which means, Rashi says, two possibilities. One is they used to make beer out of dates in those days. We find it in a number of places in the Gemara. So you have the pulp that's left over after you press him to make beer, the pulp that's left. What if all he ate was that? Or, Rashi says, a second explanation is that we're talking about before you actually use them to make the beer. You pulp them together to get them ready for beer, and then he ate some of that. Either way, does that count? Is that considered derech covered? Okay, cool. We don't know. Okay, now the next question, loy achol derech covered mai. What if he ate but not in a way of covered? Then what's considered enough? Oh, Rashi, by the way, mentions an interesting thing over here, that on this afila shigur to the tamri, Rashi mentions that in his times there were gemaras that had a girsa how much was considered a lot. And the answer is if he eats sugar at the tamari. And Rashi uses a funny expression over here, the girsa shoytim izu, that this is a girsa of fools, because who cares what's harbe? As long as we know what's more than kima, it doesn't matter what's harbe. Anyway. Okay, so if he doesn't eat the covered, then how much does he have to eat in order for it to be considered that then he's not entitled to get his expenses back? There are two amaroyim in Eretz Yisrael that argue on this. Chad amar b'ke'isa, b'chad amar b'ke'diner. One says if he eats an iser's worth of food out of payers out of it, even if it wasn't derech kovod, then that's enough. And the other one says it has to be more. It has to be a dinner. There's 24 iser in a dinner. Amri dayana de pumbedisa. Now dayanim of pumbedisa say, and Rashi quotes from a Gemara in Sanhedrin that the dayanim of pumbedisa refers to the papa bar Shmuel. They say over Rabbi Yehuda uda b'chavilis meres. Rabbi Yehuda once passed in a case. In a case where there were bundles of branches, the Gemara mentions in Shabbos, are something that's suitable to be eaten by elephants. So you had a husband over here who had pet elephants. So he worked his wife's field. He himself didn't actually get payers from the teat, but he got branches, and he got a bundle of branches out of it that he fed to his elephant. And Rabbi Yehuda Paskin, and then he divorced his wife, and Rabbi Yehuda Paskin, that's also considered that he ate enough to be considered that even though he himself didn't eat, but the fact that he was able to get hana, that he was able to feed his animal, is also considered a significant hana. And Mefarshim doesn't discuss the question, are we talking about, is Rabbi Yehuda disagreeing with the previous thing about Isser and dinner, or is he saying effectively the same thing, as long as it's the worth of an Isser or dinner, doesn't matter whether he ate it or his animal ate it. Anyway. The Gemara points out, Rabbi Yehuda l'taymei, Rabbi Yehuda is going according to his own svara. The Amar of Yehuda, ochla or l'shviyas b'kilayim hareza chazaka. We know the famous din that when a person buys a field, they have to have it for chazaka, they have to have it for 3 years of chazaka in order to have clear title to it. Otherwise, somebody else can come and be ma'arer and argue that you don't that your purchase of it wasn't legitimate, it's really mine, etc. He has to have eaten the produce of it for 3 years. So Rabbi Yehuda says, if among those 3 years, it actually says it's dafke if it's one of those 3 years, the fruit was orla, so he didn't eat the fruit itself because the fruit is aser, but he ate but he used the branches, which are not aser as orla, or shvius, the one of the years was shmita. Again, the fruit is hefker for everybody, the wood is not, or the kilayim, or it was kilaya kerem, where again kilaya kerem are aser b'hana. But the wood itself, Tosfos points out that in certain cases, there's different cases. In some cases, indeed, the wood of grapevines that are involved in Kalaya Kerem would be also as well. But there's certain cases where the wood itself, where only the fruit would be also, the wood would not. Depends basically when the vegetables or grain or whatever it is was planted relative to the grapevines. So then he says, Hadreiz Chazaka. This is considered Chazaka, even though he didn't actually eat fruit in those years, but the fact that he had enough from it using the branches is considered good enough. The Rambam has a different explanation of it. The Rambam says that it's talking about he actually did eat the fruit. So he ate the fruit as orla, even though it's aser. Nevertheless, that's considered good enough. Yes, it was Osir, and you could argue, the guy might argue, you know what, I wasn't Moshe and based in, because that's not a normal way of eating it anyway. No, it's still b'dievet acceptable. The guy did an aveira by eating Urler, Kalayim, but it still counts towards Chazakah. Yeah. The Ravid argues on that over there. The Ravid says that no, similar to what we just said over here, according to Rashi's and Tosfos' understanding of it, that it only works if he actually the fruit itself was also, so the fruit itself was off limits, and therefore all he could have was the wood. As opposed to, for example, if the fruit was mutter, and instead of eating the fruit, he just used the wood, then it wouldn't count towards chazaka.
Because the fruit itself is layers. And
there are also places. Right. Yeah, but according to the Rambam's way of looking at it, the point is, just like if he eats it as Orla or Kalai or Shvius or Kalai, and even though it's illegal, nevertheless it still counts towards Chazakah, the same way when all he uses is the wood, then it also counts towards, not towards Chazakah, but I mean it counts towards that he had Hana from it. Amr of Yaakov, Amr of Chista, another din related to this. What happens if his wife was a ketana, the kind of ketana who's able to do miyun? So she was married off by her brother or mother or whoever, not her father, because again, as we talked about many times in Yevamos, that would be Daraisa. Then we consider it kemotzi al nichse acher. Then we consider it the equivalent of spending money on somebody else's property. We said before that if somebody is yored l'sdei chaveret birshus, if he goes into somebody's property and starts cultivating it without permission, but it was a sada hasuya lita, it's a field that normally is cultivated, so even if you didn't do it, the person would have had to hire somebody else to do it. In that case, what we do is we also consider him like an oris. The jinn in that case, we consider the person like an artist, and he's entitled to his percentage. Same thing over here. We say because the wife is a ketana, we don't say like in our Mishnah that all he's entitled to is his expenses. No, we actually allow him to get his percentage, the normal percentage in that part of the world of the crop. My time, and what's the reason? Of Dubor Rabbanan Takanta, because the Rabbanan made a special takana in this case. Because we don't want him to ruin them. Meaning like this, when he's married to a woman who the only way out of the marriage is death or divorce, then he has an incentive to take care of the field because he's going to continue getting payers from it for as long as the field is fertile. So therefore he has an incentive to take good care of it. He put in a lot of expenses and all he got was a little bit of payers, fine. We said he got no payers, then fine, we give him his expenses. We don't say the fact that all he's getting back is his expenses means he's not going to have an incentive to take good care of the field. As opposed to, in this case, where she's a ketana, she could do miyun at any time. At any time, she could say, I don't want to be married, and that's it, the marriage is over. We don't want him to think then, you know what, in that case, then why should I bother? I might as well work the land as hard as possible in order to get out whatever I can while she's still with me. In order to avoid that, we treat him like an artist and say, fine, you're going to get a percentage of the crops, therefore you have an incentive to take good care of it. The better you take care of the field, the larger, the more produce you're going to get as your percentage. In what tells the case, Hahi itzid nafala abameya zuzi bechazoi. There was a woman who inherited 400 zuzim in bechazoi. Bechazoi is an area nowadays, it's part of Iran. It was several months' trip away from Babel. And I'm not sure how that is. Geographically, we're not talking, it's not that far from Iraq to Iran. But okay, whatever. There's a Gemara someplace else that mentions that it was a several-month trip. Possible. Yeah. Also Gavra, so her husband went to go and collect the money. And in the course of traveling, Apik Shismea, he had to spend 600 zuz on travel expenses. I see Abramea, and he's bringing back the 400 with him. Bahadi de Kaasi, then as he's on the way back, it's Trich Lechad Zuza. He needed one more Zuz. The Shokuminai, so he took out of the 400. So now, what? He took one Zuz. Yeah. Also, the Kamei de Rabami, so now the case comes to Rabami. The question is he entitled to recoup his expenses of 600? Actually, Mefarshim discussed what exactly is he claiming. I mean, not necessarily can he be claiming 600 in order to collect back 400. Maybe at most, the most he's entitled to is 400. Because we could argue, before we should talk about the idea, the 400 itself is considered, might be considered shvach, or at least some part of it might be considered shvach, in the sense that while this 400 is sitting there in Bei Chazoi, it's not doing her any good. So the fact that it's being brought from Bei Chazoi to where she lives is a shvach. It's like an increase in value, which therefore, fine, we could argue that he spent expenses, there's an increase in value, but not necessarily is he going to be entitled to his whole 600 that he spent back, because after all, it's only 400 of shvach. But fine, at least he's claiming the 400, whereas she's counterclaiming, no, you got the one zuz. You got benefit of one zuz, therefore you shouldn't be entitled. Amalei, so Rabbami tells him, no, it's the case of our Mishnah, Masha Hoitzi Hoitzi, Masha Ochal Ochal. He had the benefit of the one zuz, so yeah, whatever he spent, he spent. Whatever he got, whatever he benefited, fine, you're entitled to the one zuz. You don't get back your...
He didn't benefit anything.
Right. Amalei Rabbanon Rabbami, so Rabbanon point out to Rabbami, there's a difference. Hani Mili Hechadaka Ochal Pera. The case of our Mishnah is talking about where he had a chance to have Peris. If you're the one zuz that he had is part of the keren itself. The whole point is he's bringing back 400, which constitutes the whole keren. He took one zuz of that. That means he got some part of the keren. He never got any payers out of this 400. Okay, in that case, the Rabbami tells him, fine, him can't have a lehotzi loyachal. Fine, then you're right. In that case, that's the last case of the Mishnah where he spent money and didn't have a chance to have any payers. Therefore, Yeshava Kabahoitzi V'yitzo, therefore we'll make him swear how much he spent. He spent 600, and therefore he'll be entitled to collect. Not necessarily the 600, no, either the 600 or the 400, however you look at it. You can look at it that all he's entitled to, the maximum he's entitled to is 400, because even if you consider the whole 400 shvach, he's still not necessarily entitled to more than that. But at any rate, he's certainly not, but since he didn't have, since the one zuz wasn't Paris, it was Karen, we don't say he just got that one zuz and then he has to be satisfied with that.
What is my shame of him going down?
Ultimately, she has 400 zuz.
But that's the thing.
That's the thing. It's machlokas rishonim. Are we saying that he's entitled to the whole 400, or maybe he's only entitled to some part of it? The difference in value, basically, between how much is 400 zuz worth when it's sitting there in Bei Chazoi versus how much is 400 zuz worth when she has it actually here in her hands and can use it. And that difference would be the shvach that we would consider.
Right, because the part of it, the whole thing, or 100%.
Yeah. So what Mepharshim point out that it wasn't, I mean, so why did Rabbami originally think that all he's entitled to is his zuz? Because he hadn't heard the whole case originally. He heard the guy got a zuz. He figured that he got a zuz of payers, or he figured he had used the zuz, for example, to invest in a business or something, and then that would be considered payers. And they tell him, no, he didn't use it to invest. He actually needed it for travel expenses. So fine, in that case, then he still didn't get payers. It's still part of his outside.
Travel expenses is food.
You have to eat or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah, we have to.
Paris
is what he gets. Paris is the income that you get from the keren. This one zuz is not income. This is another zuz being spent in order to bring back that keren. So it's another zuz of expenses. Okay, then the Mishnah said, Yishava kamahotzi v'yitzol, that we make him swear how much he spent, and then he's entitled to collect that. Amar Abasi, hushia shvach k'neged hotzah. This is only if, when do we say that he's entitled to collect back all of his expenses, if there's at least as much improvement in the value of the property as the expenses. So he spent $100 on plowing and fertilizer and what have you, there has to be at least $100 worth of improvement to the field. Now, l'may hilchasa, in what sense do we say that? Now, there's two ways of looking at it. One way of looking at it is that if the shvach is greater than the hitzah, then he'll be entitled to collect that hitzah without swearing. So he spent 100, the field is now worth 150 more, then we would just say, fine, take your 100, you don't need to swear. That would be a kula on him. Or we could say that, or we could say it's a chumra on him. What if the expenses were more than the shvach? We'll say the maximum you can get. You can only get your expenses or the shvach, whichever is less. So what do we mean? When Rav Asi is saying that there, as long as there's shvach parallel to the hitzah, what does he mean? Does he mean to be meikel on him or to be machmer on him? So Amar Abaye, it's to be meikel. Shem hoya shvach yotzeh al hitzah, noitzeh al hitzah, b'lo shvua. If the shvach is greater than the hitzah, then he's allowed to collect his hitzah without swearing. Yeah, he put in 100. It's worth more. It's worth 150 more now. Good. Tell him. He's entitled to take his 100.
Amalei Rava Imkein Osila Rumi. Rava says that doesn't work. If you're going to rely on that, then he can play a trick over here. He can say, look, okay, I know that the shvach is 150. So instead of claiming, instead of putting in an expense report for 100, I'll put in an expense report for 140. You don't want him to do that. Elo Amar Rava. So Rava says no. What Rav Asi means is to be machmer on him. Shem Haisi Haitzah Yisera Al Shvach. If his expenses were greater than the Shvach, Ein Le Ela Haitzah Shir Shvach. Then you only give him the amount of his expenses that's equal to the Shvach. Either way, he's going to have to swear. But if the expenses were 100 and the Shvach is only 80, then all he's going to be entitled to is 80. And the other way around, if the Haitzah was 100 and the Shvach is 150, he's still going to be entitled only to 100. Either way, though, he's going to have to swear on what he's getting.
Increase the expense?
No, he can't, because that's the thing. Either way, he's going to have to swear on what
he's going to have to swear.
He's going to have to swear. So then that's a powerful incentive for him not to pat it. Ibailo. So now they have a question like this. Baal shahor arisim tachtav. What happens? The husband who is supposed to be working the wife's field, if he brought in arisim, he brought in sharecroppers instead of him. So normally, in other words, normally we're saying he would put in the expenses, he gets the produce, and we say that if he got some produce, then that's it. What happens now? Instead, he had sharecroppers doing the work. The sharecroppers expect a percentage of their produce. Mahu, so what would be the din? Do we say that they're entitled to that percentage or not? Or do we say that they're only entitled to whatever he's entitled to? Do we say adaita de baal nachis? Do we say that they went into the field on the das of the husband? After all, he's the one who brought him in. He didn't check with his wife first whether she agrees. He's like subleasing it to them. Yeah, it's all on himself. Therefore, istalik le baal is salik alahu. So once the husband has to leave, once he had his gregeris or whatever, and he had his benefit, and that's it. He's not necessarily entitled to anything else. Maybe they aren't either. Or do we say that they went in on having in mind that it's a regular plot of land, the araki kaima la arisi kaima, and a plot of land like that is normally worked by arisim, so they should be entitled to their percentage. Tosfos points out that the thing is that we're talking about over here. These arisim know that the property belongs to the wife. They know that they understand that they're taking a bit of a risk over there. That if she gets divorced, that according to the first way of looking at it, that they're only going to be entitled to something out of what the husband got. If they stay married, then there's nothing to talk about. Then
she didn't agree to it in the first place.
No, because then we said that as long as they're married, he's going to be getting the payers. So fine, he wants to say I don't want to bother working the field myself. I want to subcontract the work to somebody else, and they'll get a quarter of the pay. That's fine.
That's the question. He's allowed to the payers, but is he allowed to use arisim without his wife's consent and then charge her?
But it's not really charging her. That's what I'm saying. If they're still staying married, he's entitled to all the payers. So he can decide that instead of doing the work myself, I'd rather pay somebody else with some of the payers, which is what you do with an artist. The problem is over here that they got divorced. So now his payers are cut off at this point. All he has is whatever payers he got so far, which may only be one gregarious.
That's after the divorce?
We're saying that between when he started working on the field and the divorce, he put in expenses and all he ate was one gregarious. Are we saying, therefore, that that's all the arisim are entitled to? Whatever he's entitled to is what they get out of it? Or are we saying that you shouldn't take away from them. They're going and working the field expecting to get a quarter or whatever it is of the produce. Why should they be stiff? Because he's only entitled to one gregarious. Because after all, the logic would be that... According to that way of looking at it, we would say you pay them out of the produce. You would say, in other words, that the husband is supposed to be entitled to one gregarious. The wife is going to be expected is entitled to the rest of the produce. Out of that, she's going to have to take 25%. Pay these arisim.
But she didn't give him consent for the divorce.
Yes, but that's the thing. Remember, we said...
Or if
remember, we said before that hayyurd of the sech zei chavera, that a person goes and works somebody else's property, and it's sada asuya lita, it's a field that's normally going to be cultivated, meaning that normally you're going to need some arisim to work it, then yeah, those arisim are entitled to their pay.
Even without the consent of the owner?
Yeah, because it's sada asuya lita, because we said that it's a field that normally would be cultivated anyway.
That's when they were married.
No, but it doesn't matter. Forget about marriage. Forget about marriage. If Reuben owns the field and Shimon decides to go start working it without Reuben's permission, if it's sadah, if it's a field that normally would be cultivated anyway, then Shimon is entitled to a certain percentage, like an artist. Because it's sadah, because it normally would be cultivated. If Shimon hadn't done it, Reuben would have had to hire somebody else to do it.
And if the owner didn't want it?
Zenan of Zelechosi, basically. Zenan of Zelechosi. You're not losing out anything from having this field cultivated, because it's meant to be cultivated. Why should you deny me my... Yeah.
He's all overseas. Like, he couldn't do it.
He loves the field. He doesn't want anyone on the field.
Where's that in the
Gemara talks about it in a few places. One of them is in Bava Metzia. I believe it talks about it in Bava Basra as well. Yeah. Actually, I'm sorry. What we do is, to be exact, actually, what we do is we don't necessarily say that we consider him like an artist. What we do is we look at, as Gemara is going to say in a minute, actually, what we do is we look at we look at his expenses, we look at the increase in value of the field, and he gets the lesser of the two. So wait. Yeah, okay. So, mas before Rava Barav Chanan, maishna mehayor l'sech zdech haveder, but not the shalai bershus. Why? Why should it be different than the regular case where somebody goes into somebody else's property and plants it without his permission? Where we say shaman lo v'yad ala tachtona. We figure out his expenses, we figure out the increase in value, and we give him the lesser of the two. So why are you even thinking that these arisim shouldn't get anything? At the very least, they should be getting either their expenses or the increase in value, whichever is less.
There's no increase in value.
Then they get their expenses at least. Fine, but we shouldn't assume. We're assuming that as soon as the husband leaves, then automatically they get nothing more than him. Why? The answer is hasam leka inish tatarach, because the difference is that in a regular case, you see nobody else is working the field, so therefore, the logic again is that this field is normally meant to be cultivated. Nobody else is taking care of it. So at least something should be done with it. It shouldn't just be left to your fallow. As opposed to, hacha ikabal de tarach. Here, the argument is that the wife can say, you know what, I have a husband who's supposed to be working on it. If you guys didn't have to get involved, my husband should have just been the one who was involved, and he would only be entitled to the one gregarious at this point. Therefore, you don't get more than that. That's the argument.
That's what I was
saying. Yeah. Okay. Fine. My habi Allah. So what's the bottom line? We have to figure like this. Ibal orisu. You figure like this. If the husband himself is an oris, if he himself is a farmer and knows how to work the land, then istalik lebal istalkulahu. Then once the husband has to leave, so do they have to leave also, because the husband himself is perfectly capable of working the field. So she has a valid argument. What did you guys have to go get involved for? You should have just left it to him to do the work, and then all I'd owe him is his one gregarious. So why should I have to owe you guys more because he decided to subcontract it? Ibal lav orisu, whereas the husband himself is not an artist, so he wouldn't have been capable of working the field anyway. Then we say aral arisi kaimer. Then we say this is a field that normally should be worked by arisim, and then they have a valid claim to at least to their expenses or the shvach, whichever is
less. Yeah. But
if the man goes he can be working on other people's fields as well. An artist doesn't necessarily work only on one set of fields.
He has a job. Like,
yeah.
Quit
the
job and go work
on the soda. What? Yeah. Okay. Now the Gemara says they had another question. What happens if you have this land, which is Nichsim Lug, the husband's supposed to be getting the Paris, he sold the rights to the Paris to somebody else? Mahu, what's the deal? Do we say, okay, he himself acquired the right to have the payers, therefore he can go sell it to somebody else? Adulma, or maybe not, Kitakinu le Rabbanan Peres Lepal, why were the Chachamim Masake and that the husband gets the Peres in the first place? Mishum Rabach Besa, because in order to help with the household expenses. You want that the normal thing. What are you going to do with the Peres? You're going to bring them home, and they'll have food. They'll have food for the family. Yeah.
Or some have money.
But maybe it's not meant to be sold. Now, Mephoshim do talk about what we're talking about over here. What the Gemara's question is that what's he doing? He's selling in advance, like for years to come, the rights to all the fruit from this field for a lump sum. So then the concern is there might not be that causes problems with Ravach Besa, because what happens? You have this lump sum. What happens if he goes and spends it all at once? Then you're not going to have money for household expenses. You want that there should be a constant inflow of money or of food. So if he's selling it, so some of the Rishonim want to say, I believe the Rosh says, if he wants to sell it year by year, then that's fine. At least every year you're going to have money coming in for household expenses.
Can she oppose that?
According to the Rosh, no.
It's
fully for that. But according to other Rishonim, no. We'd say he'd have to be selling it a little bit at a time, because you want to have that on an ongoing basis. There's food or money coming in. First of all, according to the mayor and a bunch of other Tanoim and Amiroim that we learned about in Yevamos, you can sell some Dabar Shalai Bal Olam. And that's first of all. And second of all, what you're doing over here is you're selling the field in the sense that I'm not selling the field itself, I'm selling the fact that this field is producing grain or whatever. You're selling the right to the payers. You're not selling the payers themselves. You're right, those are Dabar Shalai Bal Olam. The same way as we talked about, for example, that we had an earlier perek, for example, that there's a difference, for example, between a wife declaring her maisi adair to be hektish versus declaring my hands are hektish and therefore whatever they produce automatically is hektish. So you have a similar kind of thing, whether you're selling the peiros themselves, which don't exist yet, versus you're selling what you're selling is the field's ability to produce peiros, which that's something that exists right now. So what's the din? Yehuda Mar says that fine, whatever's done is done. He's allowed to do that. Rapapa Alma Meshmei Rava Loy Also Like Kol. Rapapa says in the name of Rava that no, what he did doesn't count for anything. So both of them are saying in the name of Rava. Two opposite things. Two opposing statements. Amar Papa, Hodi Yehuda Mar Bamarema. This that Yehuda Mar Bamarema is saying in the name of Rava, Lav Mefeder Sheitmar. Rava did not explicitly say that. El Maklala Itmar. Yehuda Mar derived it. He deduced it from a case that came to Rava, namely Dahi Itza Da'ila Leila Gabra Tarkiyam Hossa. There was a woman who, when she got married, she brought into the marriage for her husband as Nichsim Alug two maidservants. Also, Gavra Nasav Itzachriti. Later on, this husband went and married a second wife while he's still married to her. This is before Chaim Jeben and Gershom, of course. Ayelachod Minayu, when he took one of these shvachas and assigned her, she's going to be now serving the second wife. Asoy Lechamei Derava. So the first wife came to complain to Rava. It's my property. It's my Nichsim Alug. He's entitled to the payrus. That doesn't entitle him to transfer her to work for somebody else. And Sobcha, and she was crying out, Loyashkachba, and Rava ignored her. Not ignored her, but in other words, like he didn't consider her argument to be valid. So Mandachaza, so whoever saw the case, such as Yehudamar, Sabar, he thought, why did Rava say that? Mishum de Sava Masha also. Evidently Rava holds that what's done is done. So therefore, the same way as we said that the husband is able to sell the payrus of the field, same way over here, the husband is entitled to take the shitcha and assign that her work from now on is going to be going to somebody else. But actually that's not the case. That's not why Rava said that he's allowed to do that. The reason is Mishum Rava Besa, because Rava holds, as we said before, the reason why you want to have that the husband has to keep the payers around is in order to help with the household expenses, with the household management. V'hakol Rava, Lu, in this case, the two women are living with him in the same household. The fact that this shifcha is mainly assigned to help the second wife, she is helping around the house. It does help with the household. It does help with the household management.
Because both are living in the same house?
Because both wives are living in the same house. Why not?
Not
not against halacha?
No, why should it be against halacha? So therefore, the second shivcha is also part of the household staff, and it's still the you still have the same rabach beisa.
But
if they were living in different houses, though, then no, that would be different. Umar says v'hilchasa the bottom line halacha baal shemacha kalkal peiros le'asav le'klum. If the husband sells the karka for the peiros, then what he did doesn't count, because as we said right, my timer. Now what's the reason? Now, before we just said now the reason is because of Rav Beisa, but the Gemara assumes that that's not the only reason. There may be more to it than that. Abaya Omer Chashinun Shema Tachzif. Abaya says the reason is you because we have to be concerned that field might deteriorate. Namely, what are we saying? The husband himself is entitled to the payers. He's going and selling the rights to the payers to somebody else. What's going to happen? This third party is going to figure, you know what, the karka is never going to belong to me anyway. The karka belongs to the wife, and if she dies, the husband is going to inherit it, etc. So it's never going to be mine anyway. I may as well, similar to what we said before about the case where a woman herself inherits trees that where the karka doesn't belong to her. The buyer of these payers may figure, let me work the land as hard as possible. Let me extract the maximum amount of payers out of it. It's going to deteriorate, and for many years it won't, and afterwards it won't produce very much. What do I care? After me, the deluge, as they say. You know, as long as I'm going to get mine. I don't care what's going to come after that. You want to avoid that, and therefore you don't want the husband to sell the rights to the payers to somebody else. Rava says, like we said before, because we want to have it should help towards the household expenses, the payers, rather than that he gets a big lump sum of money and then it may not be spent properly. My benayu, what's the practical difference between these cases? Ik benayu, ara de makar of lamasa. Number one, if the field is close to the city, so then the wife can keep an eye on things. She can very well see if this third party buyer is overworking the field and tell him not to. So therefore, there's no problem of shema tachzif, but there still is the rabach beisa issue. Or inami baal arisu. Second case where there's a difference would be if the husband himself is an aris. So if he's an aris, so Rashi explains the vart is therefore that he's able to because he's an aris and he himself gets a percentage of the payers that he gives, that the third party guy doesn't actually work the field himself. The husband works the field and gives him a percentage of it. The husband is working as an aris for this third party. Well then, there's no problem of shema taxis, because the husband himself is working it and he's getting his percentage and he knows it's his incentive to make sure it's well taken care of. But there's the rabach beisa problem. Other mepharshim explain baal arisu. We're talking about not that he's an artist in this particular field. We mean he's an artist for somebody else. He works as an artist for somebody else. So either way, the point is that he's paying the other guy off in payers. Not that the other guy is actually working the field. Inami, or a third possibility, zuzi v'kavod bo iska. What if instead of a field, we're talking about that she inherited money, not that she inherited money. Instead of that, the husband is the husband got the husband sold off the rights to the payers. He received money for it, and he invested that money in a business. So rovach beisa you have because there's a constant flow, there's a constant inflow of cash from the profits of the business, but you have the problem of shema tachzif because the buyer may overwork the land. So in all these three cases, you have a difference between the two possible reasons.